Today's program has been brought to you by Underground Meats, an American producer of handcrafted salami and cured meats in Madison, Wisconsin. For more information, visit shop.undergroundfoodcollective.org or stop by their butcher shop in Madison, Wisconsin. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue.
Live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to Word of Mouth with yours truly at heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Lady Sue. Today's guest on hashtag people we like. We'll later on welcome Frederick Broselius of ASCA, one of the Bon Appetit 2013 top 10 restaurants in America. And it's right here in Brooklyn, in our backyard. And joining him is Esben Hombo-Bang from the 2 Michelin starred Maemo restaurant all the way from Oslo, Norway. But first, instead of our usual trip to the Green Market, and before we head to Scandinavia with Freddie and Esben, you're going with me to Chicago, where I was last weekend to catch up with a couple of chefs from the American South. Chef Edward Lee from Nashville, Tennessee, and also Hugh Atchison. And we will talk a little politics, because obviously that's what's sort of top of mind right now, because the government is shut down, and the Iranian president and President Obama are new friends.
All right, Obama and Iranian president, who are now besties, newly besties.
Yeah.
they're having a dinner party at the White House next week, let's say.
Yeah.
And you're cooking it. You have the honor. So, like, what are you gonna serve them?
Oh man, fried chicken. Because I'll tell you a story. I have an experience. This is the best story, that I actually got to cook for Mikhail Gorbachev. About 2 years ago, he came to Louisville to do a lecture for the university, and they hired me to cook for him. So, and they wanted me to do it. So I made like foie gras, there was like $500 on his plate. And the only thing was, there was a fast food company called Texas Roadhouse, and they made chicken wings and steaks for like the reception part of it, you know, for like the cheap people. And he looked at the fried chicken, like the chicken wings, and he looked at my food, and he brushed me away, and he was like, he ate about 60 chicken wings, drank 2 Coors Lights, and that was it. So, and I realized, like, how the hell do you cook caviar, or how do you serve caviar to the guy that was once the president of Russia? Like, that to him is so banal, but chicken wings are not, you know what I mean? So all these people, you may think, just because they come from a third world country, the leaders of that nation don't eat that way, you know? So they get the best of everything. What they don't get is American fast food, really. So that's what I would serve, chicken wings.
They're not having poor people borscht.
No, they're not. They're not. They're eating the best of it, so they get bored of it. But they don't get hamburgers. They don't get chicken wings. They don't, you know, all the stuff that we take for granted is actually, they don't get it over there.
So that was from the Roots of American Foodways conference put on by Stephen Torres. This is the first one ever, and if I were you, I would not miss the sophomore 2014 installment for the world. It was so much fun. Chefs from as far away as Copenhagen, actually, Rosio Sanchez, pastry chef at Noma, they all descended upon Chicago. We talked American food, and then we ate American food. And it was kind of a bonkers weekend. I mean, there was also Star Chefs, La Fooding. And then coming up, we're going to be talking the North Festival, Nordic Food Festival with Freddie and Esben. But first, you know what? I want to see you guys Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday. I'm launching Cover. It's you never have to wait for the check again. We are working with restaurants like Estella, Carbone, Empeon Cocina, Charlie Bird, and the team and I will be at Exchange Alley on Tuesday, Swine on Wednesday, Yunnan Kitchen on Thursday. Come out and help us celebrate this something more than an app that's empowering restaurants and diners. Hello, October. I'm really ahead of the game this year. I already know what I'm going to be doing for Halloween. I bought tickets to the 11 Madison Park the Nomad Masquerade Ball, because there's something really sexy about masked balls. And we know that Will Gadara and Leo Robichaud and all the guys over there know how to throw a really, really good party. So there's this TED Talk that I'm kind of obsessed with. I'm not like a big TED Talk person, but this one's a great one. It's by Meg J. She's a psychologist that specializes in 20-something-year-olds. So, you know, a group of people that's very troubled. We're all very troubled. And it's called Why 30 is Not the New 20. So I'm going to leave you with this thought before we go on to our guests, is that we can't pick our family, but we can pick our friends. That's what we think, right? But we forget that soon we will be picking our families. We'll be, pick our friends who then become family, the people that we end up with, and the people we spend time with. So I empower you to break out from your urban tribe and really look around at the people that you spend time with and pick them carefully. So you're listening to Word of Mouth with Leyte Soo on heritageradionetwork.org. We're going to go to a brief commercial interlude. And when we're back, we're going to welcome Frederick Berzelius and Esben Hombo Bing, all the way from Norway.
The song is called Lung by Iggy Dean, and this is heritageradionetwork.org. Underground Meats is an American producer of handcrafted salami and cured meats in Madison, Wisconsin. They use small farms from southwest Wisconsin to source their meat. The animals are raised on pasture for their entire lives by farmers who care about animal welfare. While Underground Meats uses European traditions, they also use ingredients from the upper Midwest to try to create new types of salamis, experimenting with both ingredients and techniques. The salamis are made using heritage breeds, mostly red wattles, tamworts, berkshires, and mule foots. Try their award-winning cured pork shoulder and goat salami. To learn more and purchase products, visit shop.undergroundfoodcollective.org or stop by their butcher shop in Madison, Wisconsin.
Welcome back. We're here in the studio live at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, with Frederick Berzelius of Aska Restaurant and Esben Hombo Bang from Oslo, Norway. And Esben's here in town for the North Conference, Nordic Food, a whole lineup of really fun events this coming week. They're doing dinners on Thursday and Friday, and I get to go to the one on Friday. I'm like totally jazzed. Welcome.
Thank you.
So, you know, you two obviously have a special relationship. I mean, tell me about how you first met each other, actually.
I don't know. I think we first met in Copenhagen, yeah. Through some mutual friends.
We met again in Iceland for a thing, and then, we met here.
Yeah.
6 months ago again. And now we're back. Well, you were in Oslo not long ago as well.
Yeah, I think Espen came here for dinner about 6 months ago in New York, and I was just in Oslo about a month ago and had dinner at his lovely restaurant, Maimo, in Oslo.
So what was that, that moment that, did you hear about each other first and then you ran into each other, or...
I think we just met through mutual friends.
Ah, okay.
I think it's a pretty standard setup.
Maybe on actually. Twitter. let's just for the people, who may not be in New York or may not get to go to Oslo. Esben, why don't you describe your restaurant and what it is that you do there?
Well, it's pretty, we have a small restaurant, 8 tables. We cook only with Norwegian organic or biodynamic produce. So we pick a lot of stuff in the wild and use a lot of wild fish. So it's a very personal kitchen. We try to interpret it like the wild nature there is in Norway. It's very dramatic. A lot of like big mountains and fjords and all the things you see, and we try to somehow interpret that down to the plate. So we do only one tasting menu. Yeah.
How about you, Freddie?
Yeah. No, I mean we try and work with the northeast region of the United States in a similar approach, trying to connect the memories we have from growing up in Scandinavia. I'm from Stockholm, but moved here sometime after high school. And we look to nature, we look to what's around us, and we're also serving a tasting menu at restaurants.
Yeah, nature's is huge. I mean, Aska means ashes, beginnings and endings, and Maimo means Mother Earth. So also nature inspires that creativity. Maybe talk about what is your process for creativity? You know, writers have to get over writer's block, and you two have to dream up dishes. Like, what do you have to do? Like, what, 10 cups of coffee, a nap, like a special lucky charm? Like, how do you get creative?
I think for me, I have obviously a creative team around me, and we try to we plan creativity. I think it's important that you plan it. It's not like, I don't have like very kind of, you know, this romantic feeling about creativity where you have to like suddenly something appears to you. And so we work very very hard to be creative, and there's nothing romantic about it. We say, okay, between 8:30 today, 8:30 and 10, we have to come up with this thing. We have to push ourselves to be creative, and it needs to be scheduled. It needs to be planned. Otherwise, it will be a very non-systematic thing.
I think we actually work a little bit differently over at Aska. It's things grow a little bit more organically, but it's our restaurant also much younger than Espen's. I mean, we start looking at what's around us. We go to the market, looking at what vegetables are in season or available, and then we look to nature. We look to what's growing around us in the wild, and it's a starting point. Things change throughout the year, so many times. But yes, I mean, creativity doesn't necessarily just pop up on.
Just think, you need to plan it, for me at least. And of course, we work with micro seasons. We change some things, maybe change every day. But for me, I think it's very important that you plan it. You plan it. You need to in your schedule have time to actually dig deep down in your identity and what it is you wanna present on the plate.
And daydream a little bit. Do you take a walk? Or bath, or
I don't walk or bath, but I think it's I don't have I don't have anything specific I need to do, but I can only be creative when I'm working. I cannot, like, I'm not the type that goes to some remote location and that's it. I need to be hands on with what I'm doing to be creative.
So how did you two come up with the menu for this Thursday, Friday? Is totally unprecedented. Are they dishes that you can have at your restaurants, or is it a totally new menu?
I think it's a mix of both. There will never be a chance where you get to eat at two restaurants, or never, not going to say never, but you know, we have the opportunity to have two restaurants in one location at one time here in New York, and I think Espen's bringing some of his dishes over from Maimo, and there will be some new dishes at Aska as well. This is a great time of year to come out and eat, because so much is changing. We still have a little bit of summer left, and fall is approaching. Things are changing at the market and the forest. So you'll see both old and new, and collaborations between the two.
Fun. Esme, did you bring like anything that would be questionable in customs over to us? Like, I don't know, reindeer, something yummy?
I'm going
to
get in trouble if I say.
No, but no one's listening. No,
of course, right. we brought some stuff that is how to say, special for Norway. I wanted when we cook at Asker, I wanted some of the dishes to represent what we're doing at Maaimo, and of course I needed to bring some stuff.
It's okay. It's
okay. So I got through. They cannot take me now, can they? We're done. I'm
nope,
here.
We have Rudolph. Good, we have Rudolph in the house. I've never had reindeer. I'm kind of like hoping for that, or you know, maybe. So the sourcing of the ingredients for these dinners is going to come from stuff foraged from around here, the markets around here, your typical purveyors, Freddie, and then some stuff from your suitcase, husband.
Yeah. I don't know where we're going. We have a whole thing planned tomorrow. I think we're gonna go get some, go to a market. I'm not sure where it is, and then we're gonna go, I think, forage a little bit, and I think it also, I think I have the basics down on what I want to do, but still I want it. Also the dishes to reflect the season of New York where we are now, and so I need to kind of interpret it and put a lot of
We have an early morning tomorrow, have a little bit of a car trip,
probably
getting out of the city, driving an hour or two away, getting some ingredients from the wild, and then we go to the market on Union Square most likely, and then we go from there.
Do you forage in McCarran Park? I think
McCarran. I'm sure I picked something in every park in the city.
Oh really?
The quantities are normally small and the variety is not that great. But
so if I were to go like down the street to McCarran Park right now, what might I be able to find?
I'm honestly not really sure what's there right now, but I think I haven't picked anything in McCarran Park in a long time, so I'm not really sure what's growing there right now.
I just remember one of your
rose bushes.
Your service staff. So someone said that there was something to be had there. So I got really excited.
No, sure. I'm sure there's several things to be had there.
So let's talk about the makeup of your dining rooms and the makeup of your kitchen. We have a uniquely international set of guests today. And I found it really interesting that, you know, those international kitchens, Rene Redzepi said that the language of the kitchen shall be English. So, yeah, who's eating and who's cooking?
I mean, the chefs are cooking and the guests are eating.
Mm-hmm. So, you see, Esben, yesterday evening you said that, after your Michelin stars, the audience is now predominantly international.
Yeah, it's and I think it's fun. It's a more dynamic way, but I think it's also important that Norwegians come to our restaurant, because our cooking has roots in Norwegian food culture. So I think it's important that they experience that as well. But it's fun to be able to showcase the Norwegian ingredients and our style of cooking to an international audience. Of course, it's fun.
I mean, the same thing for cooks too. Cooks travel. We've had cooks from Denmark, Sweden, several cooks from Sweden and different parts of South America. Have people now coming this week from Iceland. I think we speak both Swedish and English in our kitchen. But
oh, really? Okay.
No, I mean, cooks have always traveled to work in restaurants that they find something different from where they, you know, where they are.
Well, that is the fun part about serving and cooking, is that you sort of can have this life of travel.
Yeah,
you can do it anywhere. Alex Stupak, who was a guest a couple weeks ago, he talks about cooking Mexican food for Mexican people in Mexico. He asked a chef friend, you know, in Mexico City, like what is that like? And that chef actually said that it's actually really, really, really hard to do. What is it when you cook, you know, New Nordic for people who have those childhood memories versus New Nordic for Americans or for people from China? I mean, how are the reactions different? Can you group them?
I don't know, but I don't know what New Nordic is. For me, it's just become this umbrella that you can just put on restaurants from the Nordic region. And I don't know where old Nordic ends and new Nordic begins, but But I think I like cooking for everybody. I think sometimes the experience for the guests gets more profound and more deep when they have a certain insight to the food culture that our food represents. So I think, but for cooking for people from the Scandinavian region is fun, and cooking for other people from all over the world is super fun, because a lot of people who come to our restaurant have read up on our restaurant, has read up on what we're doing, so they have kind of an idea what we're doing. So I think it's I don't have a problem with anybody.
No, but it's interesting how some flavor memories that represent something to me very strongly, and to maybe other Scandinavian people, might still be adapted by, you know, a person from a totally different culture and totally different way of eating. Ingredients are different, but flavors can somehow represent something very special to them too. Their childhood, their something they grew up eating.
You have a kind of a white bread that was you were not allowed to have as a kid that you.
Yeah, but we tried to make it nicer, but we kept the, flavors. You know, we made it genuine. We kept the flavors similar to what it was, the one bread that you were only allowed to have, you know, once a week.
What's it called?
It's called the limpa.
Limpa.
You're not allowed to eat that as a kid?
I'm not. My mom would bake bread herself, and the store bought bread we would only have.
Sounds horrible.
My mom. Yeah. So yeah, no, but it kind of happened by chance. But it's funny. It's when an adult sits down and eat the bread, they it brings back memories of.
What's that bread? Program. What does it taste like? I mean, I'm just like
nothing.
Now.
It's pretty sweet bread. Sweet for being breakfast bread. You know, it has like a dark syrup in it, like a molasses sort of type of sugar in it.
Well, we can thank your mother for the fact that you're a spelt fellow now. Well, interesting.
But we have a new bread in the works too that will be very reflective of you know, traditional bread making in Scandinavia.
So. Are there other sort of, I call it dishes that kids eat in Scandinavia that are sort of like macaroni and cheese or pizza or hamburgers or that have that kind of feeling?
Kids just eat herring and drink aquavit.
Fine dining, of course.
Yeah, that's it.
No, but I think kids do that. kids do that all the time. Macaronis and what is it? Macaroni and ketchup? Ketchup and meatballs. In Sweden, they...
Yeah, it's meatballs.
Meatballs, macaroni and ketchup.
I think in the Scandinavian region, there is like a lot of varieties of meatballs. You have the Swedish kind, the Norwegian kind, the Danish kind. So it's... I think it's not that different.
Okay. So we had the same childhood because my parents took me shopping at IKEA, and then I had Swedish meatballs, and
that's what we do.
Really, really enjoyed it. So Michelin's coming out today. Very exciting. So Esben,
I'm not getting anything. I don't have a restaurant anymore.
I know that you know, you went from zero to two, and that it was probably really thrilling. I mean, can you tell me about that day or what your thoughts were?
Yeah, it was. Well, the guide comes out on a different time in Europe, so I think this week it's coming out for New York, but we have to wait until next year again. But it was. It was kind of surreal, and I don't know how it is in the US, but in Europe, the Michelin Guide is really, really important. It's the single most important guide or review that you can get. So, I don't know. We were hoping maybe to get a mention of some kind, but of course, we were surprised, and we were very proud and very happy, and we defended our stars this year. So,
how did you celebrate? Herring and aquavit.
Herring and aquavit. and limpa.
So how are you feeling, Freddie, today?
No, I can't say anything. I would love to be recognized by Spain, but no, I can't really say anything. You know, in Europe, it's a very, if you cook, it's something very important when you work in a restaurant. It can be a driving force. It sets certain standards for cooking and for restaurants, for service, for food, for chefs. And I have no comment. It's a driving force that I always look to Michelin star restaurants to set a bar for what the kitchen can do, what I can do.
Well, there's certainly so many stars and sort of rankings and accolades to be had and for chefs and for other people who want to be the best at what they do. And so at some point, like after you get some stars or you get some accolades, there's got to be another measure of success that like is very personal. So what is that for you two?
I think for me, it's having a true identity in our food, and I think it's very important that we are proud of what we do, and I think it's important that the guests leave and they feel they have a unique experience at our restaurants, and then Michelin or whatever stars they come and go. But I think the most important is that we execute the cooking up to our own standards every day, and we have to push the bar a little bit every day. That's the most important for me, I guess.
No, I mean, it's all about making the customers. That's right. Right. It's all about making the customers, the guests, happy. In the end of the day, that's why we come to work. So,
what was that moment for the two of you? Like, were you guys little boys when you thought, oh, "I'm definitely gonna be a chef one day"? I mean, what was that moment?
I did not have that moment. I was said that. I never knew what professional cooking was like, really, until my sister took the path of hospitality, if you want, and moved to England after high school or college to study hospitality. And I went to work with her friends at a pretty early stage. She's a couple of years older than me. But I never, and after working a few days in the kitchen, I didn't think it was for me at all. I had other interests. And
like what?
No, I just had a...
herring and aquavit.
No, I don't know. I had other interests, and I was snowboarding a lot, and I wanted to study, you know, actually architecture and things that had to do with form and graphic design. And, but somehow, coming back to New York, I got kind of pulled back into it. And so it was a different route. I don't know. Some many people in Scandinavia start cooking when they're 14, or in Europe, I think, 14, 15. I don't know about you, Espen Bang.
I started working in a restaurant when I was, 14. And I started working like in a bistro kind of restaurant. And I think it was just like a natural kind of, you try to seek the best in what you do, and therefore I kind of always like went to the next best restaurant, and you kind of escalated really quickly. But I grew up in Copenhagen, and my mother and father were really into agriculture and nature. So it was. I always knew I wanted to do something that kind of reflects nature and respects nature. And I think the best way to respect nature is to feed people from nature. So that's why I wanted to be a chef.
You're listening to Word of Mouth with Leyte Soo. That's yours truly. I'm your host here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We're live in the studio with Frederick Braselius of ASCA, one of this year's Bon Appetit's top 10 restaurants in America, and Esben Holmbo Bang from Oslo, Norway, of Maimo Restaurants. And we're having a little catch up. You know, I want to, so speaking of your careers and and being a chef. What were some mentors or kitchens that you've worked in? You know, you two have worked all over the world. That was or sort of like turning points for you.
No, but I always try to. It was mentioned earlier, trying to find, you know, always go for a bad restaurant and chasing those. Chasing. I mean, I remember the first time I got. I think. You think that you work in a good restaurant. I worked. You know, I worked in New York before even the Michelin guide system was introduced here, and. You were all constantly changing a bad restaurant to work in. And I was at Per Se when they got 3 stars, which was a very amazing moment. I think that was the first year the guide came out here. Mm. I don't know. I worked in both very big restaurants and very, very small restaurants, and I appreciate both. There's not a life-changing moment that I think of right now.
I think it's kind of like you work in a lot of restaurants, and then you kind of you take what you think is working really well in those restaurants, and you take a little bit from each restaurant, and you try to like combine that into your own kind of thought of what a restaurant should be and how a kitchen should run. And then so I think for me there is no special. I think I've taken a little bit from everywhere and then tried to make it into my own.
Maybe like a particular mentor and sort of what they taught you.
I'd rather not say.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Moving on. Other restaurants that you're rooting for in this round of the Michelin Guide coming out in New York?
I don't know much about the New York dining scene, actually. I ate at Asuka, had a really, really amazing meal at Asuka, so I wish all the best for Frederick. And other than that, I really actually don't know. I hope everybody keep their stars and maybe some new ones. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there are so many restaurants that have opened up in the last year, and many which I haven't been able to go to. But and there are new ones opening up too, which I'm excited over. But I don't really. Yeah, I haven't eaten up much this last year. it's really bizarre when you work every day to cook food and then you don't. New York is such an amazing place with so many restaurants, such a diversity of amazing places and young chefs and things, people doing their own things. So I'm really curious to see what will show up today.
Well, certainly New
is it
York.
Today?
Yeah, it is. It's today. Today.
Tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
I thought it was today. Okay. Today, tomorrow. New York is such a we're so spoiled here that the city's jam-packed with world-class restaurants, both high, low, big and small, of all different kinds of cuisines. And it is a very overcovered city in terms of the food media. Everything that everyone does is like scrutinized and like almost gossiped about. Now, like, you know, Freddie, you know, you're getting noticed in a very busy town. Like, what does it mean to be a chef that is successful in New York, like, you know, versus, you know, other cities that are actually, you know, just as cultured and sophisticated, but maybe not as noisy in the food space?
Oh, we really just try and it's hard to pay attention to. We try and keep our head down and keep working. Mm. And just in the end of the day, it comes back to the guest and to every night's service. So New York is a massive city and so many restaurants and so many talented people. We're just very happy and honestly humbled to be recognized by people. I'm shocked and humbled and appreciate all the press and the nice things people have said about us, and just take it day by day, really.
So you've had some pretty stupendous food media show some love for your restaurant, like Matt Ducker and folks from Bon Appetit, and the write up about you was, the video was like so beautiful.
Well, that's yeah, they did a very good job.
Yeah, I was just like, it was so glamorous, it was so gorgeous. So there's this interesting symbiotic relationship, I think, between restaurants and chefs and the food media, and I'd be curious to actually hear from Esben like how that landscape is like, because I don't actually know anything about how it works in Norway.
I think we've done all the Norwegian press we can do. Not that big of a scene, but we get a lot of international press, and I think the relationship between a restaurant and the press is kind of a difficult theme, because how friendly can you be with journalists, and how friendly can journalists be with restaurants? And I think actually, Frederik, we had a conversation about this in Copenhagen last time. But it's a kind of a difficult landscape. But I just think as long as you're honest to what you do in your restaurant, that's the most important thing. And we're happy that we get recognized by international media, and we get invited to come to New York and all these other places, and we have like a small restaurant in Oslo, Norway, and in the wrong side of town of Oslo, actually.
Really? <Yeah.
laughs> But so it's I don't know, we, like Frederik said, you just take it day by day, and I don't know.
Yeah, it's funny, Matt Tucker came in to eat at Oscar in the early days when we opened. And it took many times for him to come in before I actually started talking to him, because we don't know what that relationship. I had no idea a year ago, a year and a half ago. I had no idea how the restaurant sort of media world worked, and I was afraid of almost saying hi to him because I didn't want to suck up to anyone, or didn't want to.
Of course not.
But again, he ended up showing up many, many times.
And now you suck up to him.
Now I suck up to him. No, I mean, I think he's one of the people who has been to the restaurant the most times. I think he's been there 9 or 10 times. I like him. I think he's a funny guy, and I think he's a good writer and funny.
Well eaten. What have you learned about PR and sort of that world as it relates to chefs in the last year, and maybe like as advice for other young cooks who want to be more like you two?
Honesty. I think a lot of people, there's a tendency, people talk themselves up, and I think like you have to be honest in what you do, and you have to be clear on what you do, and when you communicate with media, don't just be honest. That's all I can say. Also, like, an honesty on the plate as well.
Yeah, I mean, you have to just start from the right end. You still have to work. It starts with working, and then comes the media and everything else too. I feel like you have to have a good product first, and again, genuinity, honesty, and hard work, and then. It's not always, you know, it's not just going to cooking school and then going straight to.
And there is a time after the media as well, because it's very fun when you're having a lot of attention from the media, but it's like, just remember that why you get the attention is because you obviously did something good with your restaurant, and just keep focusing on that. Don't focus too much on the media. Focus on your restaurant. Yes. I think that's the mistake a lot of cooks do, and that they do something well in a restaurant, and then they get a lot of attention from the media, and then the media becomes more important than the actual restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important that you put your time and your heart into your restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most important.
I noticed that your restaurant has a pretty active Twitter, and your restaurant has a medium active Twitter, and then you are now on Twitter, and you and I have had non-conversations about social media, and for me, social media takes it back to like the nitty gritty of hearing your customers, like, oh my God, table seven, you know, really liked that dish because they took a photo of that one and they said X, Y, Z.
It's fucking, it's the future. We are in the future right now. It's fucking, I think it's a sci-fi movie. You get like instant feedback on like all these different media platforms, and there's so much to keep track on. But as I said before, is that that's why you have to like, you just focus on the plate all the time, because you get all these different inputs from all over, and it's easy to kind of forget the most important thing, and that is like just show yourself on the plate.
Yeah, I mean, Twitter, I have a Twitter account, and I have you who follow me on Twitter.
I definitely follow you. I thank you.
I'm learning. I'm trying to learn.
He's learning from Matt Docker.
I'm learning from Matt Docker.
Who is quite active. He's quite active on Twitter. And he has a really good Twitter, I think.
Can I say hi to Matt? Is Matt listening? Do we know if Matt is listening?
Matt, can will you tweet?
Can you tweet Matt tweet? If you're listening? So, I want to say hi to Matt.
So it's at EsbenHB and at Berselius, BERSELIUS, at Leitihsu, LEITIHSU, at Heritage_Radio, # WAM Show. That's word of mouth, WAM Show. I've always just wanted to have a show that I can # WAM Show. That was like my dream in life, and basically I can now retire. So, there's a sort of a progression from being a cook to becoming a chef. Like, you know, it's like there's sort of different things. And a chef has to be a great cook. You have to be able to execute. Now, like,
a cook has to be a great cook.
Yeah, I don't think everyone's got to be a great cook. Did you feel that was happening for you too? Like at some point in your careers, you start out by perfecting French technique and perfecting this and that, and sort of not copying, but like practicing recipes, and then suddenly you have your own style and your own.
I'm still a cook, but seriously, I don't know the difference. But it's for me, it's about cooking. I cook every day, and therefore I am a cook. I don't know about you. Like you're a grand chef.
Sorry?
You're a grand chef in New York.
I think it's fine. It's interesting how you when you work in the kitchen, how you really, you know, you work hard, and you think, I mean, probably 10 years ago I thought I was really good. And then the more you cook and the more you learn, the more you learn what you don't know. You know? And it's interesting how you can learn every day. You can still keep learning every day. You can look at cooking from different angles every day, and the ingredients, and just the everyday mission of trying to find a better ingredient
It's inspiring. And I asked that question just because I had the pleasure of discovering your food in the like third day that the last restaurant within Kinfolk Studios, Frey. Third day it happened, and it was a ridiculous $45 tasting menu. And I want to thank Pocket Fork, the blogger, Aaron Arispe, who actually works here at Roberta's. You can say hello to him.
I just saw him.
Oh, he's here. Oh, my gosh. And, you know, he and I had that incredible experience. So to see you now has been just, like, my heart is very happy for you. And
thank you.
My heart is happy for you.
My heart is also happy for you.
I'm so happy to be here, surrounded by
happy hearts.
Hearty. Yeah.
It's a big hearty thing.
Last question for you guys before we get to wine-ed-ding down, and then also pizza. Don't worry, Esmond, we're going to get you some pizza here. And other dishes, too, because those are yummy as well. Where are you eating in New York this week? When you're in town,
I don't know.
La Bernardin, Estella.
I want to go to Estella though. Yeah,
Estella is great.
I just want to. I want to eat some good food.
Okay. So nothing's like, you know, because then people might, you know, tweet us suggestions. I mean, that you're craving.
I'm super open to suggestions. Yeah. Please tweet suggestions.
At EsbenHB.
Yeah.
I need suggestions too. Jesus.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure Matt Docker will take good care of you.
He's going to take care of us.
Cool. Well, we're going to wind it down.
I don't think he's listening.
We're going to wind it down.
Wind down.
my wine thought of this week. Well, in Chicago, I went to Avec and then saw a Chocolat on the menu and just brought me back to San Sebastian. If you have not been, you must go in your lifetime. San Sebastian is to Europe as Taiwan is to Asia. Yeah, it's like the highest concentration of...
What does that mean? What does that even mean?
Esmond, you're not supposed to exist right now.
I'm sorry.
No, you can jump in. No, so what that means is that it's such an interesting little place. It's the highest concentration of Michelin-starred restaurants, sort of outside of Paris proper around, I had the pleasure of going to Mugaritz and Akelare and Arzak. And then the beach is beautiful, but then I didn't go to the beach at all because I was eating this whole time. Because then, on top of that, if you're on more of a budget, there's the Old Town. It's bar after bar after bar after bar after bar, and some of them are Michelin starred, serving up stuff like jamon and all the peppers you could eat and mushrooms and langoustines, and it's just such a bounty. And so the wine that we drink in San Sebastian is Chocolat, or if you want to make it sound cuter, Chocolina, it's also called. It's a white wine. It's super effervescent. Well, no, it's actually not super effervescent. It's like a little bit effervescent. I just mean it's super good. It's like kind of saline. It reminds me of the sea. It's low in alcohol, high in acidity. It is just such a special wine for me, and it's kind of what I've been craving right now, because both in New York and Chicago the weather has been just a little wacky, like hot and cold. And after summer of Riesling, hey Terroir, like, you know, it's ended, and I want to move on to my next white wine that I love. So get some Chocolat at your local neighborhood wine shop and tell me what you think. Until next time, this is heritageradionetwork.org, word of mouth with Leti Sue. Thanks so much for tuning in. Be well and eat well.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.